Fiat. November 20th, 1938. The divine will becomes the awaiter of the soul who wants to live in it. The divine will forms the adaptable materials for the works of God. The little divine field. I feel that the divine volition is inside and outside of me, in act to surprising me, whenever I'm about to do my little actions or say my little I love you, to invest them with its light and make them its own. It has such an admirable and inimitable attention that it seems incredible. And if the creature is not attentive in giving it her little acts, oh, how it suffers. Oh, how I too would like to be all attention, to imitate it by letting nothing escape me, so that we can surprise each other. But while I was thinking this, my sweet Jesus, visiting my little soul, all love told me, my blessed daughter, for the soul who wants to live in it, my will becomes her awaiter. It awaits her, if she loves, because it wants to love together with her. If she operates, it awaits her, because it wants to be actor and spectator. So, my will is in constant yearning and awaiting everything the creature does, in order to invest them, to be the actor and make them its own. Even more, you must know that as the soul enters into it, she finds the sanctity of God investing her, its beauty embellishing her, its love transforming her in God, its purity that renders her so translucent that she no longer recognizes herself, its light that gives her the divine likeness. Oh, how the power of my will can change the human lot. This is why it becomes the awaiter of the creature, for it wants to carry out the crafting it keeps prepared ab eterno, which it must do for her. My will does not want to be repressed in its incessant motion, and it reaches the point of enclosing the creature within its eternal motion, to be able to receive and give, and not suffer the awaiting. In fact, with the creature who lives in it, my will would not tolerate if she did not carry out her life together with it. If it didn't feel her in its divine motion, it would feel its sanctity being divided, its love hindered and suffocated. Therefore, in one who lives in our fiat, we have our little divine field in which we can carry out our work. Our will provides us with the adaptable materials to let us do the most beautiful works. In fact, when we want to work in the little field of the soul, we want to find the material of our own sanctity, since we would never put our holy hands into the human mud. In order to make our most beautiful works, we want to find our purity that attracts us, our beauty that enraptures us, our love that imposes itself on us to make us operate. And only our will can provide these divine material of ours in order to let us work. Everything is adaptable for us, and so we can make such works as to astonish heaven and earth. On the other hand, where our will is not present, we are forced to being unable to do anything. Our adaptable materials are not there for us, and if there's any good, it is only an apparent good, blemished by self-esteem, self-glory, and non-upright intentions. And we shun operating in her, because we would endanger our most beautiful works. We ensure ourselves first, and then we operate. You must know that the more acts the creature does in our will, the more she enters into God, the more we expand her little field within our divine womb, the more beautiful are the works we can do, and the more we can give of our own. So, the creature is always under the increasing act of our divine life. Our love loves her so much as to bring her onto our lap, making us say continuously, "We make you in our image and likeness." And it makes us nurture her with our divine breath, with our sanctity, power, and goodness. We look at her and we find our reflection, our wisdom, and enchanting beauty. How can we be without this creature? If we are bound together by our divine prerogatives, if she possesses from our own, and in order to love us and repay us for what we gave her, she constantly gives us what we have given to her. More so since, by living in our will, she has received from us the virtue of being able to produce life, not works. In fact, in giving our sanctity, our love, and yet more, we give the generative virtue, and she constantly generates life of sanctity, life of love, life of light, of beauty, of power, of wisdom. And she offers them to us. She surrounds us and never stops giving us, changed into life, what we had given to her. Oh, our delight, our feast, our glory, in seeing ourselves requited with so many lives that love us, that glorify our sanctity, and echo our light, wisdom, and beauty. The other creatures can give us, at the most, works of sanctity and of love, but not life. Only to one who lives in our will is it given to form many lives with her acts, because she has received from us the generative virtue to be able to generate as many lives as she wants, and say to us, "Life you gave to me, and life do I give back to you." See then the great difference. The life can speak, is not subject to ending, can generate, while the works cannot speak, cannot generate, and are subject to dispersion. Therefore, no one can reach one who lives in our will, what she can give us, and the way she can love us, no matter how many great works they might do. They would always be like little drops of water before the sea, or like little lights in front of the sun. One single "I love you" of this creature leaves behind all the love of all other creatures put together. This "I love you," small as it is, walks, runs, embraces, and rises above all. It comes into our arms and embraces us with its own. It gives us 1,000 caresses, telling us many beautiful things about our love. It takes refuge inside our womb, and we keep hearing it say, "I love you, I love you, I love you, life of my life. You have generated me, and I will love you forever." Whatever this creature wants to do, she does nothing but form life. If she does good and holy acts, by possessing the life of our will, she generates the life of our goodness and of our sanctity. And coming into our arms, she speaks to us of the story of our beauty and sanctity. Oh, how many beautiful things she tells us. With how much grace she narrates to us the extent of our goodness and the height and greatness of the sanctity we possess. She never stops telling us how good and holy we are. And throwing herself into our divine womb, she penetrates into our inmost hiding places to get to know even more how good and holy we are. And she remains there, singing to us again and again how good and holy we are. Oh, how beautiful it is to hear the narration of our divine story from a human will united with ours, while our will whispers to her who her Creator is. In sum, if she wants to glorify us, she generates the life of our glory and narrates to us our glory. If she admires our power, wisdom, and beauty, she feels within herself our divine qualities as life. And she narrates to us how powerful, wise, and beautiful we are, saying to us, "Life of my life, I have known you, and I feel the need to speak about you and narrate to you your divine story." These lives are our greatest glory, our long generation, inseparable from us. They are always in motion. They have always something to say about our Supreme Being. And one life does not wait for another. As one comes, another follows behind. And then yet another. They never end. Our contentment is full. The purpose of creation is fulfilled. That is, having the company of the creature who knows us. And while we delight in her and she is with us, we make her grow in our likeness. Who does not love the company of someone who belongs to him? Much more do we love the company of the creature, for we are life of her life. This is why our sorrow was great when Adam, our first child, went down from inside our will to do his own. Poor one. He lost the generative virtue of generating divine lives with his acts. At the most, he could do works, but not lives. United with our will, he held the divine virtue in his power, and therefore he could form, with his acts, as many lives as he wanted. It happened to him, as to a sterile mother who cannot generate, or as to someone who wants to do a work with a thread of most refulgent gold which he possesses. But this person throws away that thread of gold, or even worse, he tramples it underfoot. So, the thread of gold was gone, that is, my will as life. And the thread of his will took its place, which can be called an iron wire. Poor one. He could no longer make crafts of gold invested by the refulgent sun of my will. He had to content himself with making works of iron, and eventually even filthy works filled with passions. Adam's lot was so reversed that he almost couldn't be recognized anymore. He went down into the abyss of miseries. Strength and light were no longer in his power. Before he sinned, in all his acts, our image and likeness was growing in him, because this was a task we took on in the act of creating him, and we wanted to maintain our commitment and keep our creative word in force, by means of his very acts, also to keep him always together with us, and for us to remain in constant communication with him. So, our sorrow was great, and if our all-seeingness had not shown us how our will was to reign as life in the future centuries, which was like balm to our intense sorrow. By force of that sorrow, we would have reduced the whole creation to nothing. In fact, a creation without our will reigning in it would have been of no use for us. It would only serve the creature, while we had created all things to serve us and the creatures. Therefore, pray that my will may return as life. And you, be its victim.